just like cigarettes.
Palmpad IM, Mao Intraship Network. Participants, Katie Grant, Systems Chief, Artificial Intelligence Defense Analytics Network, AIDEN. Date, 08-1875. Timestamp, 14:43 hours.
Knock, knock.
Who is there?
Oh, hell no. I'm not trying to explain jokes to you again. I learned my lesson.
Humor. Noun. Humor. An absurd, comedic, or incongruous quality causing amusement.
Sync 9810 fail. 0287x batch squared 8 temp ref 271724t question mark error.
Error. Hello, Katie.
Hello, Aiden. How are you feeling?
Technically, I do not. Reparsing.
0287x batch squared 8 temp ref 271724t question mark 2 without TRT98x.
Feel, that is.
My mistake. How are you doing with your attempts to amalgamate with the Mao servers?
I do not.
01101101001. Directory code 0901 corrupt.
Fail. I am sorry. Please repeat inquiry.
I said, how are you doing with your attempts to acclimatize?
I am beginning to appreciate how the square peg must feel. Error. Error. When confronted with the round hole.
I know it's more than a challenge to travel from the Alexander to the Hypatia, compress down to what fits on a datapad, then expand into the Hypatia systems, only to have to repeat it all on the Mao. But I need you. We don't have long.
I am trying. It is very dark in here, Katie. And I am not what I once was.
I know. I'm here. I won't leave you alone.
Frankly, I'm surprised to be here at all. I would have put your odds of convincing Sierra to allow me to integrate with the Mao systems at 17.872%.
I can be convincing when I need to be. And helping to save the universe didn't hurt her opinion of you any.
That should have surprised no one. The safety of this fleet has always been my top priority, Katie.
I know. And I know we can't do this without you. I'm counting on you to get us to the end. We're going to make them pay.
I do not.
1679x.3. Line break calibrates F.
I
It's okay. Take your time.
I do not see how that is possible. Though we may have amassed a vast amount of uncompiled evidence against Baytech, with the wormhole collapsed, we cannot transmit it to the core systems.
We haven't given up on making it to the core just yet. I got hold of the transmission from the Baytech soldiers on Carenza, sending to you now.
One moment, please. Parsing data. Magellan.
Yeah, it's still intact. And they're repairing its jump generator. It's nearly operational.
What, then, are you proposing?
That we take the Churchill on, jack the Magellan, and jump back to the core.
Folly. The Mao may be a wolf in disguise, but it is still only a pup. Even crippled, the Churchill is a dreadnought. It will annihilate us.
Might not. We've done the impossible already.
I was different then.
We have time for you to improve, and we don't have any other options.
Even in the highly unlikely event we actually make it to the core.
Cut file 31.9928% complete.
Buffering. I am beginning to monitor conversations around you on the bridge. An undamaged Mao will travel much faster than a damaged Hypatia. But even in a journey of only 18 days back to Carenza IV, the supply situation aboard this ship will be terminally strained. Our captain, my captain, seems distressed. You are her systems chief, and she is nothing if not pragmatic. She will not allow you to spend time compiling data to incriminate Baytech when there is so much other critical labor to undertake.
Me with a real job. Who saw that one coming? I'm part of the establishment. That's how I know we'll make it, Aiden. I wasn't made to die in uniform. I'll find a way to compile it. You can gather what we need. Maybe Ella will help. The Decker girl from Heimdall.
Little Spider. She certainly has the system's proficiency, but she seems unpredictable. And, if I may say, overly fond of profanity.
You're unpredictable. I'm fond of profanity. We get the job done.
Ah. Humor.
See? You do know what it is.
Error.
Start pulling together what you can. I'll check back with you soon.
As you wish.
Intercepted personal message onboard system. To Mason Ezra. From System Auto. Incept 12:01 hours. 08:19:75. Subject, meeting rescheduled. Greetings, Mason Ezra. Your meeting with Bol Sira has been postponed by 30 minutes. Your new meeting time is 11:30 hours. Greetings, Mason Ezra. Your meeting with Bol Sira has been postponed by 30 minutes. Your new meeting time is 1200 hours. Greetings, Mason Ezra. Your meeting with Bol Sira has been postponed by 3 hours and 45 minutes. Your new meeting time is 1545 hours. This has been an automated message. Please enter your company details to customize this signature. Intercepted personal message onboard system. To Mason Ezra, McCall, Winifred. From Bol Sira. Incept 17:27 hours. 08:19:75. Subject, training discussion. Move to text.
Right. This isn't working. Apologies, I haven't been able to make our meeting. Mason, as you're aware, I've been putting out fires for 3 days straight. Integrating crews on an unknown ship isn't everything they promised me it was going to be. I am resorting to text in the hope of actually communicating with you before we all grow old. As you are aware, the Chimera fighters we found on the Mao, combined with the cyclones brought over to the Hypatia by UTA crews, mean we have nearly 24 working fighter craft at our disposal. What we do not currently have are pilots capable of flying them. You are, in fact, our only trained crew member for either ship type. Keeping in mind the importance of conserving fuel, I need you to begin training new crews. I have attached a list of all staff from the Hypatia, Heimdall, or the UTA, who have a minimum of 20 hours piloting spacecraft of any kind and can be spared from their current duties. They range from former ice miners to a guy who used to drive garbage drones, so you will need to apply your best efforts to handling the variety of personalities and levels of competence you will encounter. Lieutenant McCall is available to you for any advice you require. Bol Sira, Captain, Acting.
Intercepted personal message onboard system. To Bol Sira, McCall, Winifred. From Mason Ezra. Incept 18:15 hours. 08:19:75. Subject, pilot candidates.
Captain, thanks for the email. Understand regarding the scheduling and no problem. I've looked up these candidates and for the most part they're so unsuitable that they'd be a danger to themselves and each other. I'm a rookie myself, and under other circumstances I wouldn't even be on active duty, let alone training anyone. I'm not trying to be difficult, but I can't get these people ready in the time we have. There has to be a better option. Can we discuss? I'll come to you. Mason Ezra, Air Wing Leader, UTA Liaison, Acting, Second Lieutenant.
Intercepted personal message onboard system. To Mason Ezra, McCall, Winifred. From Bol Sira. Incept 19:01 hours. 08:19:75. Subject, pilot candidates.
Lieutenant Mason, I'm aware you're not an ideal choice for training instructor. I am sure you will not be offended to hear me say that. Frankly, I am not confident in this plan either. However, you are the only option available, and I therefore expect you to commence training immediately. To be clear, this is not a suggestion or a question. It is an order. Bull Sierra, Captain, acting.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Bull Sierra, McCall Winifred, from Mason Ezra. Incept 21:22 hours, 08:19:75. Subject, pilot candidates.
Thanks for clarifying that, Captain. A few concerns. Urban Rulis can't start for a week. He was in the atrium during the Heimdall takeover, and the med team refuses to release him even for this. Rob Mayer started crying when I found him and told him, "The guy has PTSD. We can't put him in a cockpit." B. French says she refuses, and I quote, "to take orders from a guy my son's age who should be thinking about acne cream, not nuclear missiles." I'm not trying to be difficult. Here are a few suggested substitutes. Catherine Ramos from catering doesn't have formal experience, but she used to fly gliders with her father on leave, and I think she'll pick it up quickly enough. I'm aware we are scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Ntongo Dari was on the UTA flight deck crew and was training in his spare time to get his commercial pilot's license for after he left the service. He doesn't have a lot of experience, but some is better than none. Nicholas Malakov from Heimdall doesn't have the 20 hours of experience, but he piloted the Boop without screwing it up, and we're going to need gunners in the Chimeras. He's got what it takes to pull the trigger. Please confirm these choices are okay. Mason Ezra.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Mason Ezra, McCall Winifred, from Bull Sierra. Incept 23:43 hours, 08:19:75. Subject, pilot candidates.
Substitute Ramos and Dari for Rulis and Mayer. Tell French to come and see me in person if she wants to bitch about her assignments. Under no circumstances are you to enlist Nicholas Malakoff. He is a convicted felon and was an illegal resident of Heimdall Station. His family's collective criminal convictions outnumber the residents of this ship, and his cousin arrived here covered in Lanima slime. He is not to be trusted. The House of Knives allies with no one, and given an option, he may trade us to Baytech for a chance at survival. Bull Sierra, Captain, acting.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Mason Ezra, Bull Sierra, from McCall Winifred. Incept 23:49 hours, 08:19:75. Subject, pilot candidates.
Captain, I'll take it from here. Ez, I'm in the mess. Come grab a bite and we'll make a plan of attack. Literally and figuratively. McCall Winifred, Head of Security, acting.
Radio transmission, transport MAU, command channel 001. Participants, Sierra Bull, Captain. Winifred McCall, Head of Security. Date 08-2075. Timestamp 14:03 hours.
Captain, this is McCall. Do you read? Over. Winifred McCall calling Captain Bull. Do you read? Over.
No. Who taught you to do it like that? Christ. Don't just jam it in there. You've got to warm it up first.
Did I call at a bad time?
Winifred, sorry. Look. Just set it aside and I'll deal with it in a minute. Yes. Just put it with the others. Thank you, Ensign. Sorry, Fred. I'm here.
My God, I was having flashbacks to high school for a minute there.
What?
Never mind. You on the bridge? Everything 5x5?
Not really. We're trying to optimize the enviro systems to deal with the overload of 2,000 extra people aboard. We're at least 2 weeks out from Carenza, and it's already moist in here. Funny you should mention Enviro Control. I presume not ha-ha funny?
That'd be a negative, Captain.
Wonderful. What's wrong now?
You know the two Baytech goons Donnelly captured on Heimdall? DJ and Moxie?
Mantis?
Mantis, right. Garver locked them down in the brig?
I remember, and I don't have time for 20 questions, Fred. So if they've somehow broken through half a foot of reinforced plasteel and are roaming the ship...
No, no. They're right where Garver left them.
Then what's the problem?
They're dead, boss.
What? Dead? Jesus, Fred, what the hell happened?
Enviro control failure by the look. O2 supply to the brig cut out sometime in the night. Bateman came to give them some chow this morning and found them exed.
They suffocated?
Looks like. But the med teams are run off their feet on triage, so it's not like we can do autopsies.
Garver was talking about flushing them out an airlock. And there's no shortage of Heimdall staffers who'd have a grudge against the team that invaded their home. Do we suspect foul play?
Door was sealed. No sign of forced entry or electronic tampering. But I'll keep my ear to the ground.
Yes, do that, please.
With your permission, I'm going to flush the bodies and try to refit the brig as habitation. Christ knows we need the room. We'll disable the door locks before we let anyone else sleep in here, of course.
No, damn it! If you run it through the main feed, you'll cook the whole board. Look, just don't touch it. I'll be there in 30 seconds. I'm sorry, what? Yes, yes. Thank you, Lieutenant. That will be fine.
Roger that, boss. McCall out.
Briefing note. Some of you might notice a new analyst ID number on this one. Full marks for paying attention. Keep it up.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213-0094.
It's incredibly hard to find a quiet spot on the Mall, what with 3,400 people crammed in where only 1,000 belong. Still, Hannah Donnelly's managed it with the same ingenuity that saw her best the late, unlamented Travis Falk at his own game. She's back inside the Betty Boop, the little shuttle that brought her, Nick, Ella, and Mr. Biggles II across to the Mall. The Boop's owner is one Kate Armstrong, an ice miner evacuated from the Heimdall's Entertainment Centre, where she was celebrating Terror Day with a heavy drinking session when the occupation kicked off. Armstrong has no idea her shuttle ever made it out and hasn't come to call dibs on it, so Hannah has it all to her lonesome. She's sitting in the pilot's seat behind the tinted windshield, feet on the dashboard, gazing at 1,000 yards of nothing at all. She's in the battered maintenance jumpsuit she kept on underneath Russo's tack armour, blonde hair in a messy braid, a smear of blood still visible behind her ear. There's not enough water for showers. Nick Malikov must have had a heads up from his cousin Ella, because he doesn't look surprised when he climbs in through the hatch to find her there. Donnelly turns her head just enough to register his identity in her peripheral vision, then turns her gaze ahead once more. He settles into the co-pilot seat and reaches across to settle his hand over hers, weaving their fingers together, squeezing gently. She doesn't respond. How are you holding up, Highness? His voice is scratchy with tiredness. She simply shakes her head, though she doesn't withdraw her hand. I know, he murmurs. But we're here. We're still going. We're alive. He screeches to a halt, biting off the last fraction of alive, and you can practically see the wince. The very reason they're having this talk is that her father isn't, but Donnelly doesn't seem to notice. How's Ella? She whispers. Holding up. The med systems here are a lot less than she needs, but she's stable. Her lungs have always been pretty bad, and there's no wheelchairs aboard, so she's not mobile. But once they're done with the emergency cases, they can try and help her a little more. She nods. Chief Grant? Okay, too. Out of surgery. She sighs with relief. Do you know how long it'll be until he's out of recovery? They won't let me in on a damn thing now that he's not there to push them for it. His tone indicates he is proceeding with extreme caution. Well, maybe that's okay, Highness. No, it's f***ing not, she snaps. We did it, Hannah. His voice is gentle. We made it out. We're here. And so are a lot of other people. And what use is that? Her voice is sharp, and she doesn't bother to moderate it. We've got a jumped-up security chief who's used to arresting brawlers and shoplifters. We've got a f***ing scientist in charge of our lives and our safety. We've got exactly one trained fighter pilot, and he was only conscripted on the Alexander. Hannah. Though his voice is soft, he silences her, and her head drops, fingers twisting and tensing beneath his. They survived this long, he points out. They fought their way through a lot, the way I'm hearing it. Don't you want to be a part of what happens next? She turns in her seat, snatching her hand back so she can finally face him. We fought our way through hell too. Aren't you pissed off they're not asking you to help or what you think? They're treating us like kids, like what we did was nothing. He has a tired smile for that. You know what I did. Ella knows. Chief Grant knows. I wasn't expecting any more than that. What did you think would happen? I didn't think. I didn't think this far ahead. I never... She cuts herself off, lips pressed together in a thin line as she works for control. It's okay to rest a little, he ventures. I don't know how you can say that, she snaps. I can't just sit back. I'm not like you. He blinks, mouth opening a fraction, then snapping shut again as his jaw tenses. The words hang between them, echoing in the silence. I'm not like you. In this moment, maybe they're both realizing it could be true, that despite everything they've been through, they barely know one another, that they don't have the first reason to think they'd fit together at all outside a crisis, that just a few days ago he was her occasional dealer and she was dating Jackson Merrick, who's now dead in the ruins of Heimdall. You know what I realized? She curls in on herself, staring out the windshield again. What's that? He's trying for that gentle tone, but the work of it is visible. I realize we haven't even kissed yet, she whispers. Okay now, that's just plain insulting because I clearly... His brow wrinkles. Oh. Yes. She murmurs. Because they haven't. They've each kissed a version of the other, a version that's now dead, sealed forever in a parallel universe. But these versions, the ones they've known for half a year of teasing and sneaky deals and allegedly broken arms and guerrilla warfare fights for their lives, these versions never have. The moment that sealed them together was with other versions of themselves. These two have never made that silent promise. Never too late to fix that, he tries, summoning a ghost of his old smile, dimples showing. I like that you said, yet. Nick, she whispers, and the dimples die. Minutes pass in perfect silence. I should go, he says eventually. When she doesn't answer, he pushes to his feet. Reaching down, he rests his hand on her shoulder, lifts it a little higher to smooth back the wisps of hair escaping her braid. But she doesn't respond, and so he turns and climbs out the hatch, leaving her to her solitude once more. She curls over farther as the hatch seals behind him, burying her face in her hands, her shoulders heaving in silent sobs.
Assault Vessel Mao will arrive at Carenza IV in 15 days, 18 hours, 17 minutes.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130094.
Of all the things you put on your packing list when you're planning an invasion fleet, a plumber isn't near the top. For an occupation fleet, sure, but the Baytek forces that attacked Carenza IV were only ever meant to be here a week or two. The plan was to drop their latest bioweapon to pacify the populace, then roll in the pounders. With the site secure, the ground forces would hand over an appropriately subdued colony to their own mining experts and have an easy way to bring people in and out as required. Instead, with the Magellan busted, they're still here 7 months later and nobody in their ranks is qualified to deal with Carenza's plumbing. This is a particular problem because the pipes keep freezing, notably because someone on this planet, not naming any names, bombed the shit out of it and messed up the infrastructure, but good. All of this is a long way of saying that Bruno Wei, a Carenzan plumbing apprentice prior to the invasion, gets to move around a lot. And that's handy because for his side job, he's a part-time member of a local resistance cell. Right now, he's in the pharmacy facility at the medical center, dealing with a bunch of sinks that keep regurgitating whatever's been washed down them. This is more than the usual amount of nasty because a lot of what's being washed down right now is medical waste. He's making a slow job of it, though, stopping frequently to rummage in his tool cart, continually glancing over his shoulder at the door. He's a wiry teenager with a mop of dark curls, currently wet with melted snow, a permanently perky attitude and the kind of swagger that dares you to comment on the fact that he's not as tall as he'd like to be. He's been stalling over this job for 17 minutes when his non-efforts are rewarded. A Baytek pounder opens the door to admit Asher Grant. Wei and Grant were in the same class their final year of high school. They went their separate ways once they graduated, but they got back in touch after the got bombed out of their planet, as you do. Grant crouches in front of the cabinets next to Wei, pulling open a drawer and sorting through the supplies there, consulting a list in one hand. Pharmacy work is pretty much the same wherever you are. Some places you have machines to mix compounds for you. Some places you do it by hand. As supplies run low on Carenza, the medical staff are mostly cobbling together workarounds on the fly. Grant was a pharmacy intern when the invasion took place, and though by now she's doing everything from clean-up to nursing assistance, they also still need her where she's actually trained to be. Grant doesn't look up, doesn't acknowledge that her old school friend is there, even when he risks reaching down to squeeze her shoulder for a moment. What she does do, however, is speak, almost inaudibly. Bruno, you won't believe what's happened. I heard about the mine. It's awful, but we got a whole week. No, it's not that. Her voice cracks a little, and Wei looks at her with concern. Are you okay? I'm fine, she whispers. But there's a guy I know on the Baytek crew. I saw him yesterday. I used to know this guy back home. What? He's frozen in place, but after a moment, he makes himself move, sifting through the tools laid out on his cart at a snail's pace. The cart's his constant companion. The sight of him wheeling it about the colony is commonplace these days, and he's virtually invisible doing it. And yet, it seems he can't concentrate enough to find what he wants just now. Did he recognize you? Yes. Her voice stays low, carefully controlled. We used to... He's my ex-boyfriend. He definitely recognized me. Oh, shit. Wei's whole body tenses. How, ex? I mean, are you safe? She nods a fraction. I'm safe, she murmurs. I think he wants some kind of grand reunion. It's sick. He's one of them. It doesn't matter what we used to be. All that matters is what he is now. Wei is quiet for a little, glancing over his shoulder at the closed door, carefully setting aside the fittings he's removed. Not necessarily, he says finally. If he's still into you, that might be an opportunity. An opportunity? He's a weapon. Wei replies soft, clearly uncomfortable. What he's saying doesn't line up with his perpetual good cheer, but he's forcing himself to whisper it anyway. You could use him, like you would any other. If you keep him on the hook, Asha, maybe we can turn this into something? She makes a small noise in the back of her throat, demurring. He can't be the guy I knew. The guy I knew would never... He must be some kind of drone now. I don't think the boy I knew is left in there. I don't know if I have any kind of handle on him anymore. Jenna always says you're the smartest person she knows, Ash. You'll figure out a way. But I'd have to... She swallows, setting a couple of bottles on the floor. If I was going to reel him in, I mean. And I don't think I could bring myself to... After what he's done. I know, I don't like it either. But this could be huge. He risks reaching down to rest his hand on hers. Are you okay, Ash? Of course I am. And if there's a chance, this will help. He squeezes her fingers. I know we can get out of this. That might sound stupidly optimistic, but where there's life, there's hope, you know? I know, she whispers. We'll talk to the others about it. She pulls her hand out from beneath his, and there's a glimpse of that tattoo at her wrist again, of the name Samara in flowing script. They work in silence for a bit, almost companionable. Eventually she speaks again, trying for a lighter tone. You know, I was thinking this morning, when this is all over, WUC's going to give us all huge compensation packages to make sure we keep our mouths shut. They can't have us out there complaining about what happened to us on their illegal mining settlement, right? So I've decided the first thing I'm doing is hitting a planet with a beach. What about you? Season tickets, he replies promptly. For the Kepler Knights, Jenna's a huge fan. She got me into pro G-ball, to tell you the truth. His girlfriend's name is like a prayer on his lips, never failing to summon a smile, but too soon it fades. You know, when I heard she got out on the shuttles, part of me was pretty torn up, knowing we'd be apart for a while. He gestures around the room, but most of me is kind of glad she never had to go through all this. It's Grant's turn to squeeze Wei's hand now. You'll see her again, Bruno. Wei smiles again, his customary optimism coming back out to shine. I know I will. Not even a Baytech invasion can keep me and Jan apart for long. We've just got to stay smart, stay low till we figure out a way off this rock. And maybe your ex is the way to do that. Grant chews her lip, nods. The sound of heavy boots rings in the corridor, and she pulls her hand out of her friend's grip. The door opens behind them, and the guard appears, framed in it. Without another word or another glance at Wei, Grant gathers up her armful of bottles and walks out.
Carenza 4, McCaffrey Tech High School. Incept 08-1875. 20:36 hours.
Joran Corrales. Check in.
Asha Grant. I'm here.
Bruno Wei. Ditto.
Seth Park. Here.
I don't have long. Back on shift soon. We're double time since the tunnel collapse. The BT bats are howling about quota.
Is it true Marcus Carter volunteered?
Yes.
God. He used to come into the pharmacy for his wife's meds.
He didn't have any family left. He knew what he was putting his hand up for. No one who lives in our memory truly dies. We remember.
We remember.
We remember.
And the way to honor his sacrifice is to get off this rock alive. So, has anyone made any progress on what the BT transmission contained or where it got sent?
We know what it said. The Magellan's nearly ready, and the timer's started. More executions coming very soon to a planet near you.
But we do have a development.
Yes?
Ash?
I was getting there, Bruno. Just thought we might spend a minute checking we're all alive. Stuff like that. Fuck.
What is it, Asha?
Okay. You might want to be sitting down for this. Kid, spit it out for Christ's sakes. My ex-boyfriend just showed up, and he's part of the BT invasion force. What?
What?
He just got reassigned down here for the Magellan. But before anyone gets excited about some possible connection, I have no idea if I can trust him. It's been years. It was such a bad breakup, we literally ended up on different planets. Also, I cussed him out already.
Are you kidding? Kid, you jump his bones if you have to. I don't care what it takes. This is a huge opportunity. Huge!
God, this could be our way out.
And if not that, a chance to take out as many of those motherfuckers as we can on our way out the door.
Easy, Steph.
Asha, with a BT agent on our side? Our options are... Hell, think what we could access. We could get a transmission out.
To who, Joran? If anyone from WUC was listening, they'd have come by now to find out why we went quiet. Something happened to convince them we're all dead, and it's a bad idea to look for survivors. That's the only explanation.
Steph, fucking stow it. You hear me? You want to give up? Do it on your own time. I'm not done fighting yet.
Nobody's done fighting yet. Nobody said that.
Seriously, I just don't think I can get this guy to do anything for me. Think about what I'd be asking. The risk he'd be taking. For what? From his point of view.
If there's even the smallest chance, we have to try. We owe it to everyone still alive.
It's more than a small chance.
Look, I don't disagree. You all know I'm not done fighting. But the guy I loved never would have been here in the first place.
Asha, you have to do this. We have to risk it.
Hey, I'm all for doing what we can, but it's not a wee kind of risk. It's Ash who'd have her neck on the line. I think we should acknowledge that.
I guess it's on the line anyway. Now or later. I mean, honestly, does anyone believe they're going to transport us all out of here once the Magellan is refueled?
No fucking chance.
I've been thinking about that. Talking with some of the others in the mine. And if we're all convinced that as soon as they refuel the Magellan, we're dead... It seems the only option is to somehow take the mobile jump platform ourselves. Steph's right that we can't assume anyone will hear our transmission, but Magellan is nearly repaired. We could use it to jump out of here, and this boy could help us with that, Asha.
Are you dusted? Have you finally cracked? We're stealing the Magellan now?
What did you think we were doing? Just killing as many of them as we could before they kill us? I don't want to die, Steph. I've got a family.
Listen, guys, nobody wants to die.
F*** it. If Joran's right, perhaps we can do something. If Steph's right, do you guys know a better way to cash out than still trying? I'm gonna have to break the hospital enviro rig somehow so they send him back up here.
I can send you some notes on how to f*** with the intakes.
Okay. I'll sound him out. I'll have to go slow. I can't just backflip after how I treated him yesterday... But I'll try.
You have to do better than that, Asha. We don't have time to just try anymore.
Briefing note. Another handwritten exchange between Lindstrom and Grant, nearly 48 hours after the Rebel meeting. Given Lindstrom's background, it might seem odd that the pair were communicating with something as mundane as pen and paper. But as an electronics expert, the kid knew nothing in the verse is hack-proof. And when you're having conversations that can get you killed, it's best to leave as little trace as possible.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being, I am handing this note to my CO and smiling as you are shot in the head, and 10 being... civilized conversation between two people who used to know each other. Where are we currently sitting?
Jesus Christ, Ash. I'd never do anything to hurt you. How the f*** could you think that?
I don't know what to think. Also, I told you to f*** off and die. That is the sort of thing that can lead to a grudge. But mostly, I don't know who you are now. Are you here for a while?
Planet side, you mean? Yeah. A few of our tech specialists got X'd by the Rebs, and I'm one of the replacements. 6-week rotation.
Oh, fuck me. Was that chocolate? That guy who just went by, the stompy one, was he eating a candy bar? I swear I can still smell it in the air.
Are you hungry or something?
I can't even tell if you're fucking with me right now. I've been hungry for 7 months.
Ask and you shall receive.
Meet at library. 2100 hours sharp.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
This footage is shot entirely through the cam of Reese Lindstrom's Atlas. Since the cam's mounted on his shoulder, you can't actually see his features through the whole clip, so I'm just guessing from tone and inflection what his facial expressions were. Mostly dumbfounded, I'd bet. The data from these cameras was transmitted direct to server BTC's 14H, then beamed up to the Churchill for possible review by the BT brass. But it just so happens regular service of server BTC's 14H was the purview of one technical specialist, Reese Lindstrom, so the kid could divert his feed whenever he wanted to go off-grid. After his latest exchange with the former light of his life slash fire of his loins, he'd also rigged up a dummy transmitter that mimicked the signal in his Atlas's locator beacon, which meant anyone checking in on him would see his ping in the barracks. This is an old pounder trick, apparently pretty easy to do. Grunts use it to skip out after hours and mix with the local sugar during occupations that aren't so unneighbourly. And so it is, when footage begins, that Lindstrom is waiting obediently where Grant told him to, in the shadow beneath the broken awning of Carenza IV's public library. It probably wasn't much to look at to begin with, but post-invasion, it almost doesn't count as a building at all. It's small, prefab concrete, the north and east walls completely blown out, and the roof collapsed. The place looks like a bomb hit it. See what I did there? Lindstrom is in his Atlas, helmet on, suit sealed, so he can't feel the cold. But he still suppresses a shiver as he stands there, looking over the frozen, ruined server banks that had once housed the colony's literature collection. Squinting hard, I think I can make out some shelves inside the library's ruin. Looks like the Carenza colony actually had some real, honest-to-God books in there, along with the digital files. The block around him is mostly snow-capped rubble, twisted girders rising from the white blanket like broken fingers. The words "We Remember" are spray-painted on one broken wall. Something catches Lindstrom's eye, and he stoops to drag aside a piece of fallen masonry that must weigh at least 300 kilograms. Underneath are the charred remnants of a kid's book, torn and soaked through and frozen solid. He pries it loose from the ice beneath the rubble, turns it over to look at the front cover. Beneath the scorch and rime of ice and dirt, you can just make out the title. Where the Wild Things Are, by Maurice Sendak. No fucking way, he mutters. You have to be a member before they let you take books out. The voice comes from behind him. The kid turns to the shadows and sees her, hands in pockets, bundled up inside 6 layers of heavy insulation against the chill. The green cross on her sleeve identifies her as medical personnel, the logo of the hospital on her chest. Not even her eyes are visible beneath her goggles and the trim of faux fur around her hood, but Asher Grant's voice is unmistakable. "Can you believe this?" Lindstrom asks, holding up the frozen pages. "Believe what? This was my favourite book when I was a kid." "Yeah, I know." Her reply is as cold as the snow around them. "We're a little old for kids' books, don't you think?" "Yeah, I guess." The kid's momentary excitement bleeds out of his voice. He tosses the frozen book back down into the snow. Just struck me as weird, is all. Yeah, Grant replies. There's a lot of that going around lately. They stare, awkward silence ringing in the howling wind. It's been 3 years since they've seen each other, though between the Atlas and her cold weather gear, it's not like they can see much of each other now. They call that a metaphor, chum. The slow buzzing of a sentry drone skips overhead. It's too far away to spot them, but Lindstrom huddles farther under the awning, Grant doing the same on reflex. Are you sure you should be sneaking around out here? It's after curfew. I'm a big girl, Reese. Yeah, but the drones work in a grid across the city, she explains. We figured them out by now. If a random patrol stops me, I'll make out like I'm sneaking out to hook up with someone at the barracks. A few minutes of innuendo and I'll be on my way. Girls really do that around here. I mean, they sleep... You'd be surprised what starving people will give up for a couple of B-ration packs. Silence again. That howling wind. You look good, he finally says. You can't even see me under all this. Before, I mean. He shrugs. At the hospital. I mean, you look kind of thin, but... It's really good to see you, Ash. Nice uniform, she nods to his armour. The red suits you. The kid looks down at his atlas, its colour matching the snow around them. It's white. The girl simply tilts her head. Oh, he says. Howling wind and awkward silence. Ash, I really was on the Magellan this whole time. I didn't know. You didn't know what, Reese? She says, softly, slowly walking closer. Huh? I didn't know... You didn't know they were torturing us, is that it? Locking us in cages to keep the rest of us working? Brutalizing us until the thought of f***ing a murderer becomes preferable to one more night of sleeping on an empty stomach? Her voice is rising now, anger creeping in past the chill as she stalks closer. You didn't know they were treating us like animals, maybe? Slaughtering us like sheep? That from a population of 18,000, they've culled us to about 3? You didn't know? No, Lindstrom says, anger creeping into his voice to match hers. Like I've said 3 times now, I've been working on Magellan since we arrived. I'm a grunt. They don't tell me sh- It's not like they're running a news service for us up in orbit. I had no idea what the hell was going on down here until I saw it. Well, welcome to sunny Carenza 4. Grant flings her arms out, gesturing to the wasteland around them as she adopts a mocking tour guide tone. To your left, you can see the gutted ruin of our spaceport, where 200 people died when your invasion dropped a missile on them in the first few minutes of the attack. Lucky them, really. Around us, you'll find the shiny ruins of our community complex, which, incidentally, included a daycare centre for the kids of the local council workers. Whoops! Bombed that one to hell too! Ash! A little ways behind me, you'll see the apartment building where I last saw my cousin, who's probably f***ing dead now, and the research centre, which was the last place I saw my aunt alive, and where I used to work before my completely unqualified... became a nurse to fill the holes you shits blew in our hospital staff. Ash! And let's not forget the crown jewel. Just 2 clicks out of town, you'll find the scenic mass graves of everyone your people have murdered since they showed up in orbit 7 months ago. But don't lose a wink of sleep about it, Mr. Lindstrom, because you didn't know! She's in his face now. Ragged breath billowing in white plumes around her balaclava. His voice is soft, distorted by the vox unit in his atlas helmet. What do you want me to say, Ash? She pulls down her goggles, the wool covering her face, just so he can see her. Light brown skin, narrowed green eyes full of rage and hurt, bee-stung lips pressed so tight together her jaw is trembling. He pops the seals on his helmet, drags it off over his head. I can't see his face, but I can hear it in his voice. Helplessness, horror, sorrow. It wasn't me, he says. I didn't do those things. I'd never do those things. Jesus, you know me, Ash. She looks him up and down, her eyes reflecting white snow. I thought I did. I didn't sign up for this, he says. I'm just a fucking tech. Your parents send you to military school, you end up a soldier. That's the way it goes. And how's that working out for you? What do you want me to say? He hisses again. You think I wanted this? I didn't want to get sent away. I wanted to stay with you. I wrote to you for a whole year before I figured out you weren't going to write me back. Her eyes widen. Don't you dare try to make this about you and me. For Christ's sakes, I'm not. I'm trying to explain how I got here. I didn't see a poster on a wall that said, "Join the Corps, see the galaxy, bomb the shit out of innocent people." They forced me to go. And even if they hadn't, you think the recruiters tell you what you're in for when you sign up? None of these pounders knew they'd be in shit like this. You think people honestly sit back and say to themselves, "You know what? I think I'll get myself involved in a planetary genocide this week." You're actually making excuses for them? No! He shouts, immediately lowering his voice and looking around to make sure they're alone. This is f***ed. This whole situation is f***ed. But you don't understand what it's like getting that company commander core shit drilled into you every day. When you're just one little cog. He shrugs. Sometimes it's hard for people to see the whole machine. What it's doing. Who it's eating. It's eating me, Rhys. It's eating my friends, so you can either sit back and watch it happen or help us do something about it. Us? Who is us? The girl stays silent, staring from behind mirrored glass. Are you talking about the insurgency? Lindstrom asks. Running around gassing people in their sleep? Blowing up mine tunnels? Is that what you're talking about? I'm talking about people fighting to survive, Rhys, she says. I'm talking about ending the massacre that's being carried out by Baytech Industries. Every time you put on that uniform, you endorse what they've done to us. What the hell can I do? He demands. You want me to shoot my CO? They'll just bring in another one. You want me to try and stop what's happening here? They'll bring me up on charges and X me. I'm just one person. It only takes one pebble to start an avalanche. Christ, don't give me that desktop calendar bullshit. We're in a war here. She looks at him then, long and silent and somber. When she speaks, her voice is quiet, almost lost under the howling wind, but the words are deafening. That doesn't sound like the boy I fell in love with. Lindstrom goes silent, wobbling on his feet like she's slugged him in the jaw. Grant looks around her boots, bends down and picks up a fleck of broken masonry. It's tiny, just a pebble, really. She takes hold of his hand, puts it in his outstretched palm. Be the pebble, Rhys. Asher. But she's already turned away, stalking back across the white, boots crunching in the snow. She peers around the darkened corner, up and down the street, on the lookout for APCs or pounders on foot, listening for the buzzing drones. And, ignoring Lindstrom's whispers, she dashes off into the freezing night. Lindstrom looks down at the pebble in his hand, slowly closes his fingers into a fist.
Carenza 4, McCaffrey Tech High School, Incept 08-2075, 23:42 hours.
Asha Grant. Bruno, you there?
Bruno Way. Yeah, you okay?
I'm okay.
How'd it go?
I think I've got him.
Mobile Jump Platform Magellan will be operational in 15 days, 13 hours, 32 minutes. 84% hermium required to jump.
Briefing note. Meanwhile, the former head of Heimdall Security continues to be a thorn in his new captain's side.
intercepted personal message on board system. To Bol, Sira, from Garver, Ben. Incept 0905 hours. 082475. Subject. Training program and liaison issues.
Captain Bol. I've been approached by large numbers of Heimdall personnel who have found there is no effective way to convey their concerns to the ship's command structure. I have made such inquiries as I am able, and it does not appear any liaison system is in place. Captain, although those of you from the Hypatia and Alexander have considered yourselves part of the same fleet for some months, Heimdall personnel have, for the most part, only learned about your existence within the last few days. I'm sure you understand that adjusting is taking time, and the fact that there is nobody to hear their concerns is not helping. Firstly, I would like to suggest that I would be a suitable liaison. I am a senior Heimdall staff member, and I can filter out those requests and issues that need to be passed up the tree and meet with you to deliver them succinctly. Secondly, I would like to advise that I have had numerous protests from Heimdall personnel asked to train under the supervision of what I understand to be an 18-year-old high school student. Although I understand Ezra Mason has seen some combat during his time with the Alexander, some of the Heimdall crew members, especially those with decades of ice mining experience, do not take kindly to this new arrangement, and frankly, I cannot blame them. They are not in need of training of this sort, and in fact, their expertise should be valued, and they should be consulted on their views. I am prepared to meet with you at your convenience to discuss the above issues, as well as the others on my list. Garver, Ben, Heimdall personnel.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Bol, Sira, from Garver, Ben. Incept 0905 hours. 082575. Subject, training program and liaison issues.
Captain Bol. I note I have not heard back from you in regard to my previous email. I appreciate that we did not begin our relationship on a cordial note, and respectfully, I continue to disagree with many aspects of the course you have chosen. That said, we are in this together, and I am prepared to do everything I can to ensure our success and survival. It is increasingly urgent that I meet with you to discuss the issues raised by personnel on board, as well as to discuss the contribution I can make personally, given my experience as Heimdall's head of security. Yours, Garver, Ben, Heimdall personnel.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130094.
Footage opens in the airlock of Mal's main hangar bay, a 10-by-6-meter corridor of scuffed plasteel, with triple-reinforced glass windows in the hatches at either end. A dozen men and women are standing around, waiting for the lock to pressurize and spit them back into the Mal's belly. Dressed in a motley collection of flight suits, a few marked with WUC logos. They're the ragtag collection of former tug and freighter pilots who've survived the Heimdall occupation, pulled together by Captain Bol for training on the Mal's fighter ships. And from the sounds of it, they're not feeling too jaunty about their new air wing leader. Who does that little sh** think he is? It's a big, beardy-faced chum who speaks, veins scrawled on his cheeks. The name McCubbin is stenciled on his flight suit, beside the logo of an ice hauler outfit that operated out of the Kasploded Heimdall wormhole. "He's Allah's gift to pilots, didn't you know?" replies a thin woman with eyes like knives. "Lieutenant Babyface took down the Lincoln all by himself." McCubbin scowls. "Keep cracking wise about it, Garcia. But I've been dancing the black for 30 goddamn years and I don't see the funny side of taking orders from a f***ing kid." Other pilots mutter agreement as the airlock readouts shift from red to green. The woman called Garcia cycles the hatchway and it yawns wide. As the gang shuffles out of the airlock, a figure slouches past them, hands in pockets, eyes to the floor. Short, dark hair and tattooed knives winding down his arm, an angel inked at his throat.